Bowl 52 Adam Schefter podcast, we'll be joined by the new Tennessee Titans head coach Mike Vrabel, who caught a touchdown pass from Tom Brady against the Philadelphia Eagles the last time Philadelphia and New England played in the Super Bowl. We'll also be joined by the former 49ers, Raiders, all-time wide receiver great Jerry Rice with his thoughts on the New England Patriots and the run that they've put together. ESPN NFL stats maven Evan Kaplan will bring us some added perspective on the upcoming Super Bowl matchup between the Patriots and Eagles. And we'll take your questions via voicemail for the first time in the Ask Adam segment on the Adam Schefter podcast. But first, Mike Vrabel.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Good, buddy. How are you?
You know, first of all, I don't think our paths have ever crossed like this. So it's very strange for me to speak to you when I've been fully aware of you for such a long period of time, but we've never actually spoken.
Well, that may be a good thing. We'll see going forward. I have to tell you, my family and I, when we need a good chuckle, we'll always put on Frank Caliendo, and we'll have him. You know, I mean, it never gets old listening to him.
Listen, and, if your family needs a good chuckle, you put that on. My wife, she just watches the way I act, and she gets a good chuckle out of me all the time. So, Caliendo, myself, I do my own great impersonation of myself. So that's the way it goes sometimes.
If you can't laugh at yourself, man, it's a tough life. Where do you live?
I live on Long Island, and I spend a lot of time in Bristol. Like two places. We get to go to one game all year long, the Super Bowl. Other than that, they don't let us out of the cage, basically.
And do you take the train? How do you get to Bristol?
I drive. It's about 100 miles, roughly.
How do you avoid traffic?
There is no way to avoid it. It is brutal.
You should get a helicopter put into your contract.
You know what? It's a good idea. I'll sit down and tell you some funny stories about some of the rides I've had. Like, I remember there was one year I was driving back, and I'm thinking, nothing could happen. Snowstorm. I'm on the highway. In February, I get a text. Hey, the Bills are signing LeSean McCoy. I'm like, the Bills are signing LeSean McCoy in February. Wait, the league year doesn't begin until the second week in March. How are they signing LeSean McCoy? And I start making calls. I pull over. I have no idea where I am. Still to this day, I don't know where I was. Well, they traded LeSean McCoy, and that's what happened. You're on the side of some road, and I don't know where, doing sports updates.
You were helpless.
Oh, yeah.
You got out scooped on that one.
Well, no. Actually, that one worked out okay, Mike. You know, some of them don't, but that one did, fortunately. Anyway. Congratulations.
Can I ask you another question?
Yeah, of course.
Can I just ask you how you got into it? Like, what's your background?
How do any of us get into anything? This has been purely accidental to me. I didn't intend to do any of this, and I'm so honored and privileged to do what I do. I love what I do, but I never thought I would be doing this. I love my parents, and they did a great job, but they never said to me, you can do anything you want. And I always thought that sports was something that other people did, that those were unattainable jobs. That you could never do that. And when I went to Michigan, I didn't get into a fraternity, and I didn't get a job with the football team picking up jock straps and handing out water bottles, and I didn't get a job with the basketball team doing the same thing. And so I had nothing else to do. I didn't get into the fraternity I wanted. So I literally went to the student newspaper as the last choice and started writing because nobody else would have me.
And you really don't even have to write. If the kids at Michigan are reading it, it's not like it's got to be well written. I mean, they can barely read.
That's true,
not
too.
Like you're at Ohio State or anything.
That's a separate story. That's a separate story. So how did you get into coaching? How did you get into coaching? What made you want to do that?
I'll tell you. My wife said, how much longer are you going to play? And I said, why? And she said, well, you don't look like you're 28 anymore. And I said, well, neither do you, but I'm not getting rid of you, honey. And I was probably 34 or 35, and just finished up my 14th year with the Chiefs, and I was on the executive committee, and I was doing a bunch of traveling, trying to get that deal worked out and do that. And on Memorial Day, Luke Fickell, my best friend, who best man at my wedding, is coaching Ohio State. He said, as of today, I'm the interim head coach at Ohio State. And I said, holy shit, that's amazing, man. It's everything you've worked for. You know, you got one shot. How can I help you? And he said, well, I need a linebacker coach. And I said, well, let me see if I can find you one. And he came over to the house and talked to Jen and I about, you know, just what this life was about. And I was hired at Ohio State. I, I held one press conference. I retired from the NFL, and then the next statement, accepted a job at Ohio State and went from there.
Did you ever envision yourself climbing up to the ranks to the point that you would be a head coach in the NFL?
Well, I guess sometimes you do. I mean, that's why you do anything you're going to do, you're going to do full bore, and you want to do it at the highest level. You know, everybody wants the corner office. They don't want to stay down in the cubicle. So I was taught that you try to make your boss happy, your coach happy. You try to please your coach and you try to please your boss and try to do the best job as you can at the job that you got, and then good things happen.
How would you describe your coaching style?
I would say it's direct. It's honest. I try to be pretty clear in my message and pretty concise, passionate,
yep,
energetic, hands-on. I mean, the day that I can't go out there on the field and do individual drills with the players and have them put my hands on them and show them and teach them and be a damn dummy, practice dummy, I will retire. I'll put my whistle on the ground and I will walk away because that's my favorite thing to do in practice. I just love working with players and trying to help them make them better. And, you know, because the better they play, the better the team plays, and then everybody benefits.
What did you learn from Bill Belichick, Mike? What did you take away from him?
Just how paramount preparation is, but then also never trying to anticipate how a game's going to play out. You know, I'm not sure that the Pittsburgh Steelers or the Jacksonville Jaguars, they probably thought, hey, man, we get 17 points, we're going to win this game. And then next thing you know, they're in a shootout, it's 45-42. You just can never try to say, well, this is how this game's going to go, and this is how it's going to play, because you get in a bad spot when you do that. And you have to be ready to adjust and adapt and change things quickly.
You've been around some great coaches. So I'm curious to know, when I list some of these coaches, like some of the things that you take away from them, because we all are pieces of a lot of people that were around who influence us. So how about John Cooper at Ohio State?
John Cooper, he had a great relationship with players. He'd go through the locker room, and, you know, he was energetic. He was a young 65 or 68-year-old man when he coached us, and he said, you need to take care of your body, man. You coaches, you take care of your body. It was important that the coaches worked out because you guys got to have energy. And, you know, he said, well, I don't know if you guys can beat those other players, but I promise you I'll take that other coach over there on that sideline. I'm working out every day. And, you know, Coop got that Tennessee draw. And he said, I don't know if you guys can whip their ass, but I'll be able to whip their coaches ass. And, you know, he had a good sense about him. He was a great recruiter. He's a great recruiter. Made everybody feel like they were the best player on the team.
How about Bill Cowher in Pittsburgh?
I think just toughness. I think is the toughness of it, the importance of special teams in this league. You know, being ready for a fight and just not making things too complicated.
Urban Meyer at Ohio State.
Is that where he coaches? the competitiveness, the attention to teaching, and the details that are required to teach a 18-year-old kid an intricate system that the job's not done until that kid knows what to do. And you got to keep trying different ways to reach him. You can't just, you know, sit there and be like, man, that damn kid. He'd be like, it ain't that damn kid. It's that damn coach. You know, find a way to get him to know what to do. And he demanded that we were great teachers. And, you know, not that many people know this story, but my first interview that I've ever had, because when you play, your interview is on the field, right? Mm-hmm. It's your production on the field. It's how you perform on the field. It's you're running around. You're going against another player. Well, when you go to an interview, it's kind of, you know, it's you, and it's how you kind of react, and it's much more cerebral, and, you know, there's not much reaction to it, maybe as the game would be. And so he came in and he wanted to interview me after I was there with Luke, and he made Luke the linebacker coach, and he said, I want to interview you for the D-line job. And I said, okay, sweet. You know, I played the D-line. So I just kind of casually strolled into the interview with the staff that he had hired at, you know, 6 or 7 o'clock after the workday. And so he's like, okay, and he starts firing questions, and then Fickle starts firing questions, and I was like, whoa, you know, I mean, I just was unprepared, and I just was too confident, and it really humbled me, and I left now. I left that interview very disappointed. And Urban called and he said that it was the worst thing I'd ever seen in my life. And I'm going to give you another shot. I want you to think about some things and prepare some things and come back in at 6 in the morning. And I said, Coach, I won't disappoint you. I drove to the office, got my thoughts together, got a progression, all those things that were important to him, the teaching style, and stayed the night down there and got up, was waiting there at 5 in the morning in the staff room, and guys came in, and you know, I did a much better job, and obviously he kept me. But I appreciate him seeing something in me and making me earn it. And it's a good icebreaker, because when I sat down with Detroit for my very first head coaching interview, I said, Bob, I don't know how this is going to go, but I can promise you it's going to go better than my first interview. And I told him the story. And, if you can get over that, and then you can, get through those types of things, the rest of it's easy.
You know, I think we all go through experiences like that, Mike. Like, I remember one time when I was applying to graduate schools and I was at Michigan, and they sent me into Detroit to the Detroit Free Press, to the publisher there, to administer a test. And it was a current events quiz. And I was so focused in on working for the student newspaper and Michigan and living in a college bubble that they were asking me questions like, who is the UN ambassador and who is the ambassador to England? And I didn't know any of these things.
Right.
And I literally turned in a blank paper and did not get into the Columbia School of Journalism. I was so embarrassed and humiliated leaving that test. I said, I will never be that unprepared in current events ever again. So I think part of what we do is you learn from these things. And Urban Meyer had you ready so that when you went into John Robinson's office to sit down with him, that you weren't going to have that worst interview like you did the last time.
You can ask Urban. I called him as I drove into that interview at Detroit. They came to Houston. It was 7 in the morning. I was getting to the hotel early, and you know, I didn't know if he would answer, but I left him a message, and I said, hey, I'm getting ready to go in here and interview the head coach in the National Football League, and I want to thank you, because I'll never forget how you made me earn it. And I said, whatever happens in this interview, it's not going to be like my first one.
Well, a couple of other coaches I didn't ask you about their influence on you. How about Bill O'Brien?
Well, Bill's just, it is what it is. And as far as he wears his emotions on his sleeve, he's he goes off, and he just what you see is what you get, man. When he's excited, he's excited. When he's upset, you know about it. But there's 5 minutes later, man, it's like, let's go, we're moving forward. And you know, it's just raw emotion. But he's able to stand in front of the team, and guys are able to crack jokes at him, and he's able to have a good time, and he's able to lock back in. And he does a great job with being able to laugh at himself and have the players be able to talk to him in a way that, not that he's the anybody who's the butt of jokes, but when you have a great team and you all care about each other, you can have some fun once in a while.
Now, you were with Houston from 2014 to now. What were your thoughts when you would play the Titans? What are your thoughts on the roster you're inheriting now as the head coach at Tennessee?
It was a physical team. You know, they ran the ball. I had two big backs. The line was good. Tight ends, I think, it's a good group. Got better this year, drafting Smith and the young receivers, but they've got a good skill set with them. Matthews, obviously, Tajay Sharp, and then most recently Corey Davis. They give you a lot of issues. I mean, there's a lot of guys you got to cover, a lot of guys you got to think about, and defensively, good secondary and. Linebackers that play hard, good guys on the edge, that'll set the edge, that can rush, play physical. And then certainly, Jarrell is a great player. He plays with a lot of instincts and awareness, and it's fun to watch him play.
You know, what's interesting to me is to see the influence again. I'm sorry to bring it back to this, but the influence that Bill Belichick's had on the AFC South, because there you are in Tennessee with some Belichick influence, Bill O'Brien in Houston, we may see Josh McDaniels in Indianapolis. And even Doug Marrone, Bill's gotten recommendations from. He recommended him to the Jaguars owner before he got hired. Your first year with New England was 2001. That was the start of this run. Did you ever imagine that that run would be what it has become over
time?
No,
I don't think anybody would ever imagine the prolonged success over the duration that it's been. And, you know, it's got a lot to do with Mr. Kraft. It's got a lot to do with Bill, and you know, and obviously the players, you know, led by Tom.
What's it like to catch a touchdown pass in a Super Bowl game against the Eagles, as some other people may find out, Mike, as you did?
Right. It's exhilarating. It's you know, you line up and you know that the ball is going to come to you, and you got to find a way to get open, and it's like trust. And I want our players to play with trust. And Tom trusted that when he threw the ball to me in the few times that I was down there, that I was going to catch it. And we have to have that same type of trust here with Tennessee, that no matter what we do, the guy, you know, you're going to trust the guy next to you and the guy that you're playing with.
You can tell Corey Davis and Delanie Walker that they need to have the same type of touchdown catch ratio that you had. 12 passes thrown to you, 12 touchdowns.
There you go.
I mean, that's quite a feat there. Hey, Mike, I really appreciate taking some time. Thank you very much. Lots of luck. It's an honor to finally get a chance to speak to you.
Yeah, I appreciate you. I appreciate what you do for the league. And thanks, Adam.
And that's the Tennessee Titans' new head coach, Mike Vrabel. Coming up, we'll hear from the ESPN stats maven, Evan Kaplan. We'll take your questions on voicemail for Ask Adam. And next, the 49ers Hall of Fame wide receiver, Jerry Rice. Hello, Jerry.
Hey, guys. How you guys doing?
How's everything going with you?
Hey, life is good, man. Look at me. Come on.
Jerry, we've watched the New England Patriots, and you guys had a dynasty out in San Francisco, an unbelievable team. What has been your reaction to what you've seen out of New England now going for its sixth Super Bowl title?
Just see a winner and someone that is really a team that is hard to slay. And, you know, you have teams to go up on the New England Patriots early. They find a way to fight back and win the football game. So they have the confidence. You know, they feel like they could win any football game. And I think it's amazing for the franchise, you know, what they have accomplished. You know, Kraft, Belichick, also Tom Brady, you know, they work well together as a team. And just a hard organization to defeat.
Jerry, you're on the all-decade team for the 80s, the all-decade team for the 90s, the all-anniversary team, the NFL 75th anniversary all-time team. When you're playing on those teams and you got one quarterback to catch the pass from, you picking Joe Montana or Tom Brady?
Well, I'll make both of those guys look good no matter what.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, you know, Tom Brady, I would love to, you know, catch a ball from him. Joe Montana, we had an unbelievable relationship. I mean, the chemistry and the timing and all of that. And I'm sure I probably would have had the same relationship with Tom Brady.
Jerry, you are 55 years old right now. It's hard to imagine that. Are there any aches and pains, wear and tear from all the football that you played from 1985 through 2005?
Guys, you would not believe I'm probably in the best shape of my life right now. I'm still active. I'm still able to go out and doing a training camp for the San Francisco 49ers. I went and I practiced with the team, and the players couldn't believe at the age of, I was 54 at the time, they couldn't believe that I could still get out there, run routes, and have that endurance. And I think it just, you know, it had a lot to do with my hard work, my commitment, and the love of the game, and just wanting to go out there and play football week in and week out.
You could play today, right?
I was joking around with John Gruden about this, because I told him, I said, John, I said, look, I still got about 80 catches in me. And he was like, don't joke with me, because we'll seriously fine you, you know, back to the team. But yeah, you know what? I played it for over 20 years. It's a whole different game now. It's more of a passer game now, and you know, it's the ideal situation for wide receivers.
What if John said to you, Jerry, I want to come sign you. I want you to come to camp this summer.
I would be on the football field in a heartbeat.
Really?
I wouldn't even give it a second thought, because, you know, I played it for over 20 years, and I played, and I still think I played it the right way, because I was like a little kid on the football field, and to be able to impact, you know, so many lives and, you know, touch so many people, I think it made everything worthwhile.
Is there any chance that could happen realistically? Any chance that he would come to you and
now,
that you would actually do it?
Don't you start rumors right now, okay?
Jerry, I'm just looking for a Sunday headline. Come on.
No, you're looking for something.
How about Jimmy Garoppolo in the Bay Area? What's your reaction to what he's brought to the 49ers?
Hey, man, I love Jimmy. I call him Jimmy GQ, and you can tell that he makes everybody better around him. And just the energy and what he brought to the season towards the end, I think fans are excited. I think players are excited. You know, they feel like we have a quarterback that can lead us, and we just got to continue to build around him.
You played for the 49ers from 85 to 2000, the Raiders from 2001 to 2004. Both teams seem to be resurgent. Which of those teams to you is in better shape moving forward and is more likely to reach the pinnacle first?
God, I really thought it was the Raiders because, you know, expectations going into the season were so high because we were talking about maybe, playoffs or, you know, being in the Super Bowl. And they went the other direction this year. I don't know what happened. Maybe because of, you know, distractions or, you know, maybe not the attention to detail. I don't know. But I would say right now it would have to be the Raiders, you know, with them having so many players, which they have proven that they have a great collective group of guys. And the year before, you know, they really won some football games. But I think the Niners are – got something to really build off right now, and they just got to keep bringing players in to surround Jimmy. And if they do that, they can do some great things this coming next season.
Jerry, you are one of the greatest, if not the greatest player of all time, 20 years in the NFL. What is your assessment of the state of the game today? Because it is maligned in many quarters, but I'm curious to know your thoughts with your contributions to the sport.
I think the state of the game right now is that I would still say we are the number one sport. I still enjoy watching football, you know, even if I'm not playing anymore, you know, if I'm tailgating or if I have family and friends over to the house just to enjoy the game, I still enjoy it. There are certain players that I like to watch. Say a Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, A.J. Green, Antonio Brown, Big Ben, Aaron Rodgers. So, you know, I think Tom Brady, all these guys. So I think the state of the game is still good, and it's just that it's a different era, and it's just a different strategy now because the ball is in the air the majority of the time. And back when I played, it was the run game. Then we threw in some passes, so you didn't, as a receiver, you didn't get that many opportunities.
Yeah, I wonder what kind of numbers you would put up today, Jerry.
You know, I was joking around about that. I think I probably would have doubled everything.
Doubled, right? I don't doubt that.
Yeah, so it's fun though because my thing, when I played the game, it was all about, you know, my route running and being precise on the football field and getting open.
Who's the one receiver in the game today that you look at and really admire?
I all those guys that I named, Larry Fitzgerald. You know, I know the work that he puts into the game, the dedication. Antonio Brown, Julio Jones is just a beast out there. He reminds me a lot of, Terrell Owens. You know, big physical guy, but you know, a guy that can run a 4.3 and run by you and really strike fear into the opponent.
And who wins the Super Bowl?
I'm just hoping for a good football game. You got to lean a little bit towards the Patriots because they have been there so many times, but you cannot count out the Eagles. You know, this is a hungry team, but they're going to have to be able to slay the dragon. And that dragon is Tom Brady. And it's really a difficult task, but, you know, I'm just hoping for a good football game.
What is the 10-time first-team All-Pro, 13-time Pro Bowl player, 3-time Super Bowl champion Jerry Rice doing these days?
Hell of a good dips.
That's what you're doing, Jerry? Hell of a good?
Yes. You know what? I'm doing that, and they have so many different flavors. They have French onion. They have bacon horseradish. They have buttermilk ranch. And they also have the no-fumble fanny pack. Now, you know, with all the spills and the stains and all that, you don't have to worry about that anymore. You got a place in a no-fumble fanny pack. You have a place for your chips. You got a place for your dip and your beverage. For a chance to win the no-fumble fanny pack, you can go to hellofagood.com.
Jerry, thank you very much for taking time today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Cap hit.
All right, welcome back to our NFL ESPN statistician, fact maven, whatever you want to call him. Evan Kaplan. Evan, thanks for taking some time. Thanks for crunching some numbers, and thanks for giving us some perspective on Super Bowl 52. All right, when we first looked at the playoff picture about 2 months ago, we talked about the importance of getting the number one seed in either conference. What do we think of it now?
It's really come to fruition. We talked about it around Thanksgiving when there were a couple teams in each conference still in contention for that top seed. And you look at Super Bowl 52, number one seeded Eagles, number one seeded Patriots. That's now 9 of the last 10 teams to play in the Super Bowl have been one seed. So when you look back and you're looking back and you're starting to look at next year's regular season, every game really matters in the recent playoff history in terms of getting home field and that equating to getting to a Super Bowl.
So 9 of the past 10 Super Bowls have included double one seeds.
9 of the last 10 teams to play in the Super Bowl. So since the 2013 postseason, so 5 postseasons, 10 teams total. The only team that wasn't a one seed was the 2016 Falcons, obviously lost to the Patriots.
Well, we now know how important being a one seed actually is.
Certainly
all right, the list of accomplishments for Tom Brady and Bill Belichick is longer and longer by the postseason. How do we put into perspective what they have done so far?
It's amazing. So what I want to do is let's look at the two of them. We obviously know the Patriots, 10th Super Bowl, but Brady and Belichick together, their 8th Super Bowl. That's twice as many as any other head coach, quarterback, starting quarterback combination in NFL history. Tom Brady will be the first 40-year-old to ever start the Super Bowl. Bill Belichick is coaching in his 11th Super Bowl as a head coach or an assistant. And now this is kind of one of my favorites. You combine their ages, Bill Belichick, 65, Tom Brady, 40, that's 105 years. That is the oldest for any starting quarterback head coach combination in NFL history, and they held the previous record, which was last year. So one of the things that strikes me is how they're still able to do this towards the back half of their careers.
Every year, it seems to take
them
to do it.
It's amazing. Right,
is there any sort of connection, as strange as it might sound, between Tom Brady and Nick Foles?
There really is. On the surface, not a lot in common, but you look at Nick Foles, obviously started the season as a backup behind Carson Wentz, and he will try to be the first quarterback to start the season as a backup to win the Super Bowl since Tom Brady did it. His first Super Bowl run with the 2001 Patriots, replaced Drew Bledsoe early in the year, went on to lead the Patriots to a win over the Rams in Super Bowl 36.
Now, we're going to hear an awful lot of storylines over the next couple of weeks, but one of them will be Chris Long and LeGarrette Blount, the two Eagles, going up against their former team, the New England Patriots, that they won a Super Bowl with just last season.
Mm-hmm.
We ever seen anything like that before?
We've seen it twice in NFL history, and it happened around the same time with the same two teams. So that's play in two straight Super Bowls with two different teams and win both of them. Ken Norton Jr. did it with the Cowboys in the 1993 mm-hmm. season, then the 49ers in 94. And then you look from the other perspective, Deion Sanders did it, starting with that 1994 49ers team, and then with the Cowboys in 1995. So Long and Blount will try to join those two, win it, play in it, 2 years, two different teams.
You buy into anything about what color jerseys the teams will be wearing on Super Bowl Sunday at all?
Normally I wouldn't, but you look at some of these strange trends with the Super Bowl. Obviously 2 weeks to dig into the game, you come up with things that you wouldn't come up with in normal games. And this one, 12 of the last 13 teams to win the Super Bowl wore white jerseys in the game.
Wow.
I can't explain it. There's should be nothing behind it besides superstition, but you look at the only team in that stretch that didn't was the 2010 Packers. They wore their home green jerseys, and the Patriots have worn white jerseys their last 3 Super Bowl wins, including Super Bowl 39 over the Eagles.
And Evan, as we found out this week on Tuesday, even though the Patriots are the home team, they have chosen to wear their road white jerseys in Super Bowl 52 against the Eagles, obviously hoping that the Patriots will make it another win for the team wearing the white jerseys, which have won 12 of the previous 13 Super Bowls. Thank you, Evan.
Thank you.
Ask Adam.
Ask Adam.
Ask Adam.
Ask Adam.
Ask Adam. We should ask Adam.
Some really exciting news today, Adam.
What's that, Josh?
We are introducing a new element of Ask Adam because we love everyone who interacted with us on Twitter, but we also think it would be pretty cool for some of these people who ask these questions to us to be able to hear themselves on the podcast. So we opened up a voicemail inbox where people can actually ask you their questions instead of having to go through me. So what do you say? Let's get to the first one, Adam.
I like that. I think it's a good idea. Let's see what the people have to say. Let the people speak, Josh.
Hi, this is Blaine McCormick from Phoenix, Arizona, and I wanted to hashtag ask Adam about the newest addition to the Arizona Cardinals Football Club and their head coach, Steve Wilks. Mm-hmm. Adam, I just want to kind of get your perspective on Wilks. Where do you see him taking the program? How good of a head coach do you think he'll be, just because he hasn't been a head coach since 1999 in the NCAA ranks when he was with Savannah State? And that year they only went 5-6. So what does it mean for Wilks to have the head coaching position with the Cardinals? And do you think he'll be successful in the NFL? Thank you.
Good question. And I think the Arizona Cardinals made a good choice there. Look, when you talk to people who know Steve Wilks, they say he's a leader of men, which is what you want in that position. He's going to command the respect of that room. I think his defensive coordinator is going to be Al Holcomb, the Panthers linebackers coach, which is a loss for Carolina, a win for Arizona. Now, of course, so much of this comes down to the offensive side of the football, who's playing quarterback, how the offense is run. And those are questions that not just Steve Wilks can answer. That will fall largely on Steve Keim, the general manager, who has shown a very good eye for talent in the past. But I like the Wilks hire, but I think any coach is just about only as good as his quarterback. So who's the quarterback going to be? And once we know the answer to that, then we can figure out exactly how effective Steve Wilks is. They got the right ingredients and I think the right style, but again, there are still other things that they need to address before we see how Steve Wilks fares.
Hey, Adam, this is Ricky, and I had a quick question about Le'Veon Bell. I wanted to know what the chances were of him staying in Pittsburgh, or is he going to end up somewhere else, do you think, this offseason? All right, thanks, Adam.
Thanks, Ricky. Appreciate that. Great question. And look, that'll be one of the central storylines of the offseason. I think that they don't want to lose him, but I don't like the way this all ended. I don't like the fact that he was late to meetings, that there were issues there. That tells me that it's not a certainty that he's back in Pittsburgh. Again, I think that they would like to try to bring him back. I think they could always use the franchise tag, which is just north of $14 million. You heard Le'Veon Bell say he doesn't want to play on the franchise tag again. Again, he'll have some say here, but it would not be wise, not good business for Pittsburgh not to tag Le'Veon Bell. So I think the chances are he does return, but I don't think it's a certainty.
At what point, Adam, let me interject here, does he become more of a headache than he's worth?
Well, I think that he could be as much of a headache as he wants to be when he is as good as he is carrying the football, Josh. And again, he's a rare talent. But, you know, at some point, you have to make sure that people are in line, acting the way you want. And he didn't always do that for them. I don't think it diminishes his ability to earn the kind of payday that he wants. He's still a top back in all of football, maybe the top back in all of football. Talent wins. And it's not like he's a bad enough guy that it's an issue. So I think they will bring him back, but I don't think it's a certainty.
Fair enough.
Mr. Schefter, how are you? This is Saya out in New York City. Big Packers fan. And I'd like to know what you think about the changes made so far. The OC, the DC, the GM.
Yeah.
I'm kind of stoked to see what Pettine can do with this defense. Which free agents do you see on the radar? And what do you think my Packers will do with Jordy and Cobb? Looking forward to hearing your responses. Take care.
Well, thank you very much for the question. I think he said his first name was Saya. But the one thing that Saya said there was that which free agents do you think they'll pursue? And that, to me, is the most interesting question that he asked. The fact that we're talking about which free agents the Packers will pursue is a news item in and of itself, because when Ted Thompson was there, they did not pursue free agents by and large. They largely ignored free agency and just tried to grow their own and take care of their own. That was the big deal. So the fact that they have a new GM in Brian Gutekunst, and he is going to be, I would think, active in free agency and doing things like that, is to me a huge development for Green Bay. Now, they've got some wide receiver decisions. Randall Cobb is a free agent. They've re-signed Davante Adams. So to me, when they re-signed Davante Adams to the money that they did right before the end of the season, that told you that they are moving in a direction where they believe in him. Now, I don't know if they can afford to pay all these receivers, and Jordy Nelson's been so good for so long, but I don't know if they can count on him at the same level as he was in the past. Doesn't run that way anymore after all those injuries and years. Randall Cobb, free agent. My guess is they paid Devontae. My guess is Randall Cobb moves on, and the Packers will be active in free agency. They've got a number of needs to address here, always looking for more of a pass rush. But the fact that the Packers will be active in free agency, to me, is the headline there.
Hey, Adam. My name is Connor. I'm an Atlanta Falcons fan, and I'm upset that we decided to retain Steve Sarkisian as offensive coordinator. And the justification seemed to be, well, in Kyle Shanahan's first season as offensive coordinator, we went 8-8, and we weren't very good. Well, what people are forgetting is his first season as offensive coordinator with the Falcons was also Dan Quinn's first season as head coach. And we had an old Roddy White. We had Michael Person at center. We upgraded them to Mohamed Sanu and Alex Mack. And so this season, the only difference on the offense from last season was our fullback. It's the same exact offense other than that. So the only person who managed to shut down Julio Jones was Steve Sarkisian. So did the Falcons make a big mistake in deciding to keep him for another season?
Well, listen, you know, first of all, I don't think it's fair to say that we gave more time to Kyle Shanahan, so we're going to give more time to Steve Sarkisian, because with all due respect, I just don't think that Steve Sarkisian is Kyle Shanahan calling plays. Very few people are. It's like all the teams saying this year, well, we want to go hire the next Sean McVay. The problem with that is there is no next Sean McVay. It's like saying, I want the next Peyton Manning. I don't want to draft a Peyton Manning after he came out. There's no next Peyton Manning either. So Steve Sarkisian, what you're hoping for is that he grows into the role. The first year was a roller coaster, inconsistent, mixed results, not a great performance. Their average score per game was down over 11 points over last year. So the offense fell off, and the strength of this team became the defense, for better or worse. And so what you need to do is you need Sarkisian and that offense to just show improvement. The parts are in place. I understand why you're a little uneasy about the whole alliance at this point in time, but the fact of the matter also is they feel like after a year in this offense, it's probably not a good idea for Matt Ryan and that offense to have its third offensive coordinator in 3 years. That is usually not a great recipe. So give Sarkisian another chance. I get that. Let's not compare him to Kyle Shanahan, because he's not. And let's hope, if you're a Falcons fan, that he continues to grow and improve that offense.
This is Daniel from Iowa. I'm a Kansas City Chiefs fan. And I was wondering if Alex Smith will be traded for 2 second-round picks or a first-round pick to either the Buffalo Bills or Denver Broncos. I think those are the only two destinations he's going. I think Blake Bortles is stuck down there in Jacksonville because he made the AFC Championship. But, yeah, I'm wondering if Alex Smith is worth second-round draft picks from the Bills or Broncos or a first-round pick for either one of them. See you later.
Thank you, Daniel. I think that they'll trade Alex Smith. I think they'll ask for 2 twos, which is what they gave up to get him. I don't think they'll get that in return. I think they'll get a 2 and then something. Let's just say 2 and a 6. I'm making this up right now. And I think the Buffalo Bills definitely will inquire. That would make some sense. I think the Cleveland Browns will inquire, because if you go trade all your draft capital, some of your draft capital, of all the draft capital you have for Alex Smith, and let's just say it's a 2 and a 5. Now you go use the first overall pick on, say, Saquon Barkley, and the 4th overall pick on Minka Fitzpatrick, and you got Alex Smith, Saquon Barkley, Minka Fitzpatrick, quite a lineup. So I think Buffalo's in play, Cleveland's in play. What about Washington also, where if you trade a 2 and a 5 for Alex Smith, and now you're freed from the Kirk Cousins contract that's going to cost you a $34-plus million franchise tag, you've got a long-range solution in Alex Smith, and now you don't have to worry about paying Kirk Cousins. So, to me, I don't dismiss Washington from that conversation if that's the direction the Redskins decide to go. There are a lot of different places that I think Alex Smith would be an improvement for, an upgrade on. The Jets, the Jaguars, you're limiting your teams, and I don't know why you're doing that. And particularly if you get two of these teams interested, maybe you get a 2 and a 3 back for him. Maybe you do get 2 twos. I don't think so, but he's a valuable quarterback with skills, and I do believe he'll be dealt, and I do believe there'll be interest.
The second part of that voicemail, Adam, I thought was interesting. Daniel, our friend there, seems convinced that Blake Bortles is definitely still going to be in Jacksonville. Would you agree with that?
No, I do not. I think that Jacksonville is in a situation where they have Blake Bortles as what I would call a placeholder. In other words, they can go explore a trade for Alex Smith. They could go explore Kirk Cousins. They could go explore Case Keenum. They could go see if Drew Brees would be willing to leave New Orleans, which we don't expect, but you never know. There are a number of scenarios out there, and if you can find somebody that you believe is an upgrade over Blake Bortles, you go make that move. And if you can't, then you do have Blake Bortles for next year. But his $19-plus million contract is not guaranteed at all. So they can go into free agency. They can look around. They can ask around about quarterbacks, inquire, make a move. And if they make a move for a quarterback that they believe is an upgrade, well, now you just go release Blake Bortles. You free up $19-plus million in cap space, and you move on with your new quarterback. If you can't get that new quarterback, you hold on to Blake Bortles. To me, that's how that one works.
Hey, Adam, this is PJ from New York. I'm just wondering, with the past result of Carson Wentz and Paxton Lynch in opposite directions, what impact do you think this will have on Josh Allen getting drafted this year? Thanks so much.
Yeah, I don't think it has any impact on Josh Allen being drafted. Josh Allen's going to be at the Senior Bowl this week and have a chance to impress scouts. He's going to be at the Combine. He's going to have his pro day. He's going to go on the circuit. He's going to go interview. Everybody's going to be digging into why he was so inaccurate during his last year at Wyoming, why he struggled to complete passes, whether or not a quarterback who has such a low completion percentage in college can be accurate enough at the next level. That's up to everybody to decide. But again, I go back to what one personnel director told me before the draft last year. His words echo in my ear right now. He said, you can mark this down in pen. Josh Allen will be the number one overall pick in the 2018 draft. Now, I still don't know that he will be, but that's how strongly this one man felt about his potential and abilities. He's a big man. He's basically the same size as Ben Roethlisberger coming out of Miami of Ohio. He's got ability. He's got great arm strength. And we'll see how high he does go in the draft. But I don't think any of these other quarterbacks will impact where he does go.
Massive hands, too, Adam.
Yeah, I know.
Especially if in a cold weather town, like, I don't know, Cleveland, that could make a big-time difference, no?
Oh, no, listen, hand size is one of the most overlooked and most important factors, I think, in a quarterback. And you're right, Josh, if Cleveland is interested in Josh Allen, and we don't know yet if they are, that would be something that I think would be significant.
All right, Adam, last one.
Hi, my name is Marcus, and this is my hashtag Ask Adam question. What do you think the Minnesota Vikings should do with the quarterback situation now that Keenum has played so well, Bridgewater hasn't thrown a pass in 2 years, and Sam Bradford has injury concerns? Do you think they should pay him the $20 million or whatever the market is set at this coming offseason?
Well, thanks, Marcus, and I would answer that the same way that I answered the Blake Bortles question in this regard. The only difference is I think that the Vikings do franchise Keenum. I think they put the $23 million tag on him, lock him in, and then you look around to see if you could get an upgrade. And if they find somebody that they believe is better than Case Keenum, which I don't think they'll do, then maybe you yank the tag if he hasn't signed it. If he has signed it, maybe you trade him at that point in time. So there are a few different ways they could go with this, but I think that with the way he's played, I think they tag him. I don't think they could physically count on Sam Bradford. And I still think there are medical questions about Teddy Bridgewater, which leaves Case Keenum in a position to be basically the strongest man standing. And I know he did not play the way that everybody wanted in the championship game, and maybe some of his luster has worn off, but I still think he's the best option at this point in time for the Minnesota Vikings, and I think worthy of the franchise tag.
And I think we're worthy of receiving more voicemails, Adam. I think
love
that, yeah, that was cool. I enjoy the addition of your voice onto the show, and by you, I mean the fans, because you've heard enough of my stupid voice.
The listeners.
That's exactly right. And so if you want to get involved and ask your Ask Adam question, you can do so by leaving a message with us on our phone line. It's 860-506-5779. So give us a call, ask your Ask Adam question, and if it makes the cut, we'll answer it.
And so there's the latest edition of the Adam Schefter podcast as we get ready for the New England Patriots and Philadelphia Eagles in Super Bowl 52. A special thanks to the Tennessee Titans head coach, Mike Vrabel, Jerry Rice, our stats maven at ESPN, Evan Kaplan, and my producer, Josh Macri, for sifting through some of those voicemails from your calls, which we hope you keep sending in for next week's program, when we will have the voice of Super Bowl 52. Al Michaels joining us for a lengthy conversation. We look forward to speaking to Mr. Michaels, and we thank you all for listening this week and look forward to next week's Adam Schefter podcast.